now. We'll go to agenda item number four. It's your last chance if you're going to scream, because it's a long agenda item. So I don't want any voice changes doing this.
I am, but y'all continue. I'll be brief.
Okay. You now have agenda item number four. John, if you'll introduce Richard.
I will introduce Richard Holbein. Everybody knows to go over the performance report that I believe everybody's. It'll be up there on the screen, I think, to some extent, then you've got a hard copy of it.
Right.
Also in front. Richard.
Well, I'll try and go through this item fairly quickly. And if I could just have you turn to page 2 of the report, just to take a quick look at what happened over the last quarter and the last year from the standpoint of the investment markets in general. It was not a good market, if you will, from the standpoint of international for the quarter. It was a good market from the standpoint of the domestic equities, and it was an awful quarter from the standpoint of fixed income. From the standpoint of the overall year, it was fine from the standpoint of international and domestic equities, and it was not a good quarter or a good year from the standpoint of fixed income. The Barclays aggregate down 0.7%, so enough of a principal deterioration to absorb all of the income that was generated, and then with a little bit of a loss. If I could get you to turn to page 8, which is really just looking at what happened from the standpoint of fixed income, pretty dismal. The quarter, there were no bright spots. From the standpoint of the year, if you were in high yield, you were pretty happy. But that would be only because the spread to Treasury significantly narrowed, which quite frankly, at some point in the future, will start to expand again. So that's probably a momentary type of gain that's been made in the high yield area of fixed income. The yield curve down on page 9, significant move up from the standpoint of fixed income from the prior time frame. From the standpoint of at the end of the year, significant increase. The two-year treasury was up 11 basis points, the 10-year treasury up 65 basis points, which is what really drove the overall loss. The problem with fixed income, we know, is it's a mathematical game. The economy can be doing well, companies can be doing well, but if interest rates rise, the principal value of the securities that have already been issued will fall. And it just takes a while for that to, you know, work its way through the system. I was one of the people on your side of the desk, if you will, last time we had a significant time frame of rising interest rates, and it was a very painful time. When you'd look at 70 cents on the dollar from the standpoint of your fixed income securities, and when you're talking about 30 or 40% of your assets, that was a very painful thing to get through. If I could get you to turn to page 13. By the way, if there's anybody who wants to talk about any of the pages I'm skipping, you know, I'll be happy to, you know, go back and talk about them. But from the standpoint of overall allocation and the targets that were established, we're within target ranges and you know, fairly well diversified from the standpoint of equity, fixed income, real estate, and MLPs. On page 17, a look at the overall return to the plan. For the quarter, the plan had a positive return. On the year-to-date basis, up 5.7, with a very good trailing 1 year on a net basis up 12.7 and a gross basis 12.8%, which puts us very close to the first quartile compared to other public pension plans. For the 3 year time frame, up 11.5%. 5 years is 5.6. We still have that downtime frame from 2008-2009 sitting in the 5 year number, but still above average return compared to other public pension plans. The big disappointment, if you will, I believe, in the overall return is the Royce Premier Fund has had significant underperformance over the last year, putting it down in the lower 10% area compared to other mid to small cap managers. With a 17.1% return for the year on an absolute basis, 17.1 is really nice. But compared to other small to mid-cap managers, it was significant underperformance.
Why is that?
Well, I wish I knew exactly why it was, but most of the things that have happened in that small to mid-cap area has been one of a rush, if you will, towards lower quality securities that all of a sudden have bubbled to the top. Maybe it's because we're at the end of a market cycle. I don't know, but they have higher quality securities in there, which have tended to underperform.
Is it short term? I guess.
We're certainly hopeful that it's short term. If it's not short term, we're going to be doing something about it. And I think when we get back and we can look at some of the statistics from prior time frames, when we look at their graphic portrayal, which gives us a longer history than when we've had this particular fund. They were here when we first started working with the fund, and it looked like they were going to be a decent performer. They had been historically. A lot of managers in certain parts of the market cycle tend to sometimes roll out of favor, and then at other points in the market cycle tend to bubble back to the top. And so if you look at them through a full market cycle, they've been a very, very good performer. More recently, not so.
Richard, does it make sense, or can you contact, like that firm or any of these others for that matter, and will they respond? Because I would think you say, hey, my record is showing that you're underperforming the benchmarks and the indexes and all this stuff. What's going on there? Make them defend what the heck they're doing.
Being a mutual fund, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. Is there a way to get any sort of feedback from either?
You can get it by stuff that's published like 6 months right. late and all of that type of thing.
Can't get it.
Yeah. But I can see what information I can get for you the next time.
I wonder what their turnover rate and so forth have been. Do you see any of that? Have they been turning that portfolio over a bunch? Or?
They tend to have a fairly low turnover rate in general. Specifically, I don't know what it's been. But I can find that out also. That one's probably easier to determine than...
The small cap is so volatile to begin with.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
A couple of big wrong picks.
That's right. Sometimes they're early. They pick something that looks like it's going to be a great deal, and it just languishes on them, especially in a upward market like we've had. I mean, you look at 25% over the last year for the small to mid-cap area. I mean, that's huge. The Harbor International Fund has done, fairly well from the standpoint of keeping up and exceeding slightly the index, slightly below average compared to other international large cap managers over the last year. over the last 3 years, though significantly better than both the index and the managers. Here again, I think this is a quality issue, and more recently, the higher quality securities have not done quite as well as the ones that are lower quality. On page 19, fixed income, the Metropolitan West and Vanguard short to intermediate term fixed income funds, we've not been on them very long. They both had negative returns, primarily because of the rise in interest rates. But from the standpoint of the overall market itself, if we look at the intermediate aggregate index, the combination of the two funds has done very, very well, down 0.5%, and the aggregate intermediate was down 1.6%. And there's something I want to talk to you about as far as fixed income just a little bit later. Cohen & Steers Realty Shares, very nice on a year-to-date basis, very good from the standpoint of the last year, and we haven't had them for a full three-year time frame. Page 20, the overall retirement plan from the last 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 years has been above average over most of that time frame. It was just slightly below average, a 51 rank versus a 50 for the two-year time frame. For the four-year time frame, when coming out of the downturn, if you will, BlackRock's portfolio did not keep up with the initial bounce out of the problems of 2008-2009. So we lagged somewhat, the overall return to the fund being up 10.7%, and that put us below average for the four-year time frame, but we're above average for 5 years, 3 years, and for the last year. As I said earlier, close to first quartile for the last year, up 12.8%. From the standpoint of total domestic equity on page 22, for the last five-year time frame, 6.3%, right around median return compared to other total equity accounts. And from the standpoint of the last year, above average return with a 22.3% return. Compared, if you will, to other total equity programs. Where we've tended to do much better, as you can see over in the 2008 in the far right-hand side of page 22, when the market was under severe stress, the higher quality type of securities that tend to be what's held by the managers in this fund, even though there were negative returns, were less negative than the overall market itself.
I can't answer the question. What's the numbers and parentheses mean?
Percentile rank.
Low numbers good.
Low numbers good. Low's
better. Okay,
low's better.
Okay, what creates that number?
It's all of the domestic equity funds that are in the database, which are thousands of them.
That's the 10, and that makes 10.5%.
That would be the it's a percentile rank. So a rank, for instance, 1 year total domestic equity funds, you just put them down and then you just cut them by 1%. Changes, and we had a rank of 42, meaning we were in the top 42% of all total
of that total universe.
That's right.
Gotcha.
So we're better than average.
Yes. We're better.
And Richard, the one below, you actually said the total, the policy one.
That's a combination of the targets, if you will, from the standpoint of domestic equity in the small and large cap area.
As they rank against what?
In the same unit, in the same database, is that return where it would rank against other total funds? So effectively, what it does is, for longer time frames, says, okay, how are we doing compared to the indexes that the managers are being compared against?
So we're slightly, in that particular case, we're slightly better domestic, we're slightly better than the index, basically.
For the 1 year time frame, and we're you know, below the indexes for the 5 year time frame. One of the primary reasons was the lack, if you will, of performance off the bottom with BlackRock. On page 24,
Richard,
this is
I'm sorry to back you up, but on total domestic policy, we rank year to date, total domestic, we're 5.25, and that's 70%. Is that, in other words, we're in the low rung there.
Right.
Am I reading you right?
Right, that's right.
Okay. We're below 50%. Then.
Right, and that's primarily being driven by the underperformance of the Royce Premier Fund.
Where are you?
That's the Royce, primarily because of the Royce Premier Fund having...
Yeah, but it only has such a small piece, I'm surprised it pulled it down that much.
Let's see.
10%.
No, well, that's of the total fund. Now, this, we're talking about equity only. So of equity only, they would be like 14% or something like that. Is that, or maybe, no, I'm sorry, higher than that.
Yeah.
Would be like
22%. You're looking about the equity piece, which is 60%. They're 10% of 60% or something like that. So.
No, anyway, I just did.
Right.
My bias when I look at something like this is to take the furthest number to the right. I like to look at the longest time frame that I can, because anybody can be hot or cold for a short period of time. It's the longer the time frame that tends to even things out.
Of course, we've got kind of a skewed report here because we haven't had some of these for this full
calendar.
I mean, that's the thing that makes it difficult.
Right. Yeah, you're comparing, get out there, you're actually comparing managers who we no longer are using. So it's do you make changes, you know, the ones we currently have, are they going to be better? It's like you almost have to wait 2 or 3 years to see how they do.
But if we look at, and that's where I was heading to on the next page on 24, if you look at the current manager set up from the standpoint of the manager with the most assets in fixed or in equity in area is the Brown Brothers Harriman Core portfolio, which for the 5 year time frame was up 9.9%. Which was very, very good, slightly underperforming, if you will, in the 1 year, on the fiscal year to date basis.
You said something about 9. Where did I miss?
The 5 year, 9.9%.
Okay. Gotcha.
I mean, if we'd have had him for 5 years, we'd be very, very happy with the overall, return.
He got the big bounce off the bottom, too, though.
Richard. He got, but look what he really did, if you look at it, is 2008. He's in the top 1% in 2008, which is outside of the box.
He lost less money than everybody else.
Yeah. So he didn't have anywhere near. He didn't have anywhere near the amount of makeup that had to happen.
That's a big deal.
It's a lot easier.
You can evaluate somebody unless they've been through a whole cycle. It's not just a certain number of years. It has to be through an up market and a down market and back.
No question about it.
And then you know how well they're doing.
Correct me, Richard, if I'm wrong, but looking back out on the 5 year, if you're looking at the index, the S&P 500, that's ranked 22, that's saying that that the actual S&P was 22nd ranked out of 100 of all of the managers in that particular thing. So the index actually beat everybody but 78 they
right for that time five
for that for a 5 year
for that 5 year time frame.
The index was the better thing to be, and it's in the first quartile.
If you look at the numbers, active managers generally fail to meet the S&P index.
Yeah, the S&P.
It's just hard to beat. It's just the index has very little. Well, the index has no expenses associated.
That's right.
Even an index fund can't beat the index because it has some expenses, 7, 8, 10 basis points. But
I guess the one argument I know you make about against passive investing is that, you know, it's fine as long you're going to ride the losses all the way to the bottom.
Right.
In that, of course, you're going to ride the whole way. So it's you're going to ride the roller coaster the entire route, as opposed to, in theory, the active guys are going to lop off those. Hopefully.
They're
probably going to lop off some of those losses, but they're probably going to miss out on some of those gains too.
Only 50% of them are going to be, you know, by definition, they can't because they've got expenses.
In the retail world, the S&P is very, very difficult to beat because the fees are, egregious. In the institutional world, it's a little bit different. And I put together some information on rolling time frames, institutional managers versus S&P. And the S&P rolls into and out of favor and whatever, and over most time frames, the institutional managers beat the S&P. So, I mean, it is from the standpoint of somebody with their 401k or whatever. Not 401, IRA, because some 401ks you get advantage of institutional portfolio pricing. But in the IRA world, the index is very, very difficult to beat. And Royce Premier on page 26 was a savior in 2008. Participated well in 2009, 2010, 2011. Fell on their sword in 2012 and fiscal year to date. Just appears to be somewhat out of phase with what's happening in the marketplace during this extended bull market that we've had here over the last 4 years. But year by year, you know, when the market was really down, they saved a lot of money, if you will, on the downside. When the market came back, they participated fairly well. As the market got further and further into its bull market, they've begun to lag.
The far right column, that's annualized return, is it not?
Which were you, 2008?
No, 2012, yeah, 2008, 9. Is that an annualized return?
Those are that's for the full 12-month period. Yeah. So, yeah, it would be an annual return.
How are they so good for each of those years relative? Their numbers are roughly low, except that 12. But then if you look at a five-year, which is roughly that same period of time, they're in the 84th percentile for 5 years.
Well, that's because of this last trailing 12-month time frame where the average, you know, the market was up almost 26%. They were up 17.
One-year, two-year, three-year, four-year, and five-year are all skewed by what you did the last 12 months.
Yeah.
So all your prior earnings, now you're dealing with a bigger base and everything comes down.
I mean, it was a night on an absolute basis, nice to have 17% return, but on a comparative, but to 26%, you know, you just kind of fell behind the, fell behind it. Now, as we start to move through, and if knock on wood, they protect again on the downside, as we move through into a market correction, hopefully they'll, you know, have capital preservation in the portfolio that will bring them back up on a relative basis.
It would be interesting to see what their allocation is among the small companies.
Oh, I can get that.
I know that. Yeah, that's available. But I'm just wondering if they maybe had a higher presence of quality companies in small cap versus more volatile than
right.
some of the others had that caught the bounce.
Right. Well, I mean, if you look at the same thing happened in fixed income, it was like high yield, which a lot of people call junk bonds, had a positive year. But from the standpoint of domestic fixed income, the rest of it negative. So higher quality lagged, and the other didn't. On page 28, Harbor International Manager, very good, relative performance across most time frames. The fact that the international markets had a very, very, very tough year, and our tough 5 years, if you will, they had a positive return over that time frame. The market, ACWI ex-US, had a slightly negative return. On a relative basis, they were up near the first quartile. A big portion of this, obviously, is all of the turmoil that's been going on in emerging markets and everything else from, on a global basis. But I think they're a very good manager, and as the markets move along, they're going to perform very nicely. Metropolitan West on page 30, the fixed income guys have had a great historical track record. They've done very, very well over long periods of time, and even, here this most recent time frame on a fiscal year-to-date basis when the market itself was negative and they were negative, relative performance was, fairly good.
They were less bad than the others.
And
they made more.
And the Vanguard short-term investment grade on page 32. Their most recent time frame compared to other short-term investment grade portfolios has fallen off somewhat. Their one-year number is just still very, very good at first quartile with 1.8%, and their five-year number, 3.8%. It's been a very good performing portfolio for a very long period of time. It's fairly short duration, a little bit about like 2.2 years, so in a rising interest rate environment, it should start to replenish itself fairly quickly. Cohen and Steers, real estate fund, very good returns over the last 5 years, up 8%. Did very nice in 2008 protecting, even though it was a horrendously bad market during that time frame. They've done very nicely over the full 5 year time frame. Part of the reason we're in real estate is the income that's generated. It's generating, around 4 to 5%, which is what you're going to get out of bonds. But you also have, X some of the market movement up and down, inflation protection with real estate as it moves through through time, which you don't have with bonds. And That pretty much concludes the, you know, performance.
Is there not any information on the MLP?
Well, the MLP is short. We have, you know, had the data on the first page. There's no universe and all of that stuff for them. It's on.
Access on page 19, I guess.
On page 19, yes.
Okay, there it is.
Just the actual returns.
Yeah.
And the primary reason for the underperformance versus the index is the sale or the accrual for taxes.
We find it worked out for tax issues, did we not, John? No, you guys. Numbers guys.
I don't think we're in any of them that way.
Yeah, this is the ETF where taxes are paid at the portfolio level. And there are ETNs where taxes are flow through to the entity itself, like, you know, a bank would issue an ETN. And the ETN being an exchange-traded note where you are receiving the underlying performance minus a fee and issued a 1099. The return there would be a little bit higher because most of the income that flows off is not in the form of taxable income, then the bank can use it in their own portfolio. So if we want further diversification here, I think we should include ETNs in the process. Any other questions? And here again, this one is just like the REIT is there primarily as an income generating entity.
John, you have to fill out like a UBTR on that? I didn't think so, because I don't think we would have voted for it.
No, there's none. That's what I'm saying, that these are...
I thought that was one of the reasons we went with it.
Yeah, these are 1099.
All right.
So you equalize them for tax.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Right.
Tax equalization.
Yeah, I remember we had that discussion. I
thought so, but then, you know,
I wasn't sure. I
remember it being what it is.
I assumed we had resolved it, but I didn't know. I couldn't remember.
Right.
Good question. Thank you. Are there any other questions for John? I think we've sort of asked him as we went through.
Well, I have a question because we have three agenda items left. And I don't want to go past anybody's ability to concentrate here without having a break. But if we take a break, then it's almost a waste of time not to grab your lunch while you're taking your break. So do you want to take a 10-minute break and grab your lunch and work through? Is it a disrespect to the speakers if we're eating while they're talking? Okay.
Not if they can eat, too.
If that's the case, it's 10 to 12, and we will come back at 12 o'clock.